Good afternoon. I'm the room convener. My job is to make sure you're in the right place. So this is the Enterprise Information Systems and Services track. The presentation is from in-house to open source, creating a sense of identity management. I'd just like to mention also that the evaluations for all of these sessions is online. And I encourage you to take some time during the EDUCAUSE event or shortly after to check into the EDUCAUSE site and fill in the evaluation form for the sessions you go to. I'll just very briefly introduce our speakers. They're identity management architects. Jeremy Rosenberg is from Simon Fraser University in British Columbia, and David Steiner from Rutgers University in New Jersey, right? And I'll let them do the rest of the introductions.
Thank you. Well, that kind of covers my little introduction bit. I'll just say, which is good. So again, the title is From In-House to Open Source, Creating a Sense of Identity Management. I am David Steiner. There we go. I work at Rutgers University, that's in New Jersey, as an identity management architect. I've been there since 1984, doing various identity management middleware type projects, even before they were called identity management projects. We created an identity management team in 2006, and I've been a member of that since then. And we'll get into a little bit more about that and everything else a little later, but I'm going to hand it over right now to Jeremy to give his bit.
Thanks, Dave. So I'm Jeremy Rosenberg. I'm from Simon Fraser University. Tell me if you've heard this one. I, too, am an identity management architect. I've been a Java developer since 2004, and I recently completed my MBA in management of technology. So a little bit about this presentation. It's a campus perspectives presentation. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about how identity management has evolved at Simon Fraser. Then Dave's going to talk about how the same sort of things evolved at Rutgers. We'll talk about our legacy systems, we'll talk about the strengths and limitations of those systems, talk about our future requirements, and then we're going to talk about the Open Registry project. Open Registry is a JSIG incubator project. We'll explain how it got started, we'll explain what it is. We'll talk about why we decided to go open source with this next generation. Dave's going to give you a little overview of the current state of the project. And I'm going to actually give you a quick walkthrough of how the Open Registry workflow works. I find that when we start talking about it, people sort of have trouble seeing how it fits in with what they do. And so we've created a little animation that will hopefully explain that. So a little bit about SFU. It's named after this guy, Explorer Simon Fraser. We are one university with three campuses in Burnaby, Surrey, and Vancouver, BC. We support about 32,000 students, 900 faculty, 1,600 staff, about 100,000 alumni. So that gives you an idea of the space we're working in. So SFU's legacy identity management system starts at the core with this thing called AIMAINT, which is our account provisioning system. It's an in-house built tool, and it served us for many years. Today, it actually accepts identity information from PeopleSoft. So we have the PeopleSoft HR, the PeopleSoft student systems, and that feeds information about everybody who comes into the university, well, most of the people who come into the university, into this system, and the system generates computing accounts and sends that information back. AIMAIN also feeds a mail list system that is also an in-house build. Mail list has become a bit of a misnomer because it's actually more of an access control list at this point. You can use it to send email, but we often use it for creating access control lists. It's quite powerful. In order to push that information out to the rest of campus, we've developed another in-house tool called UDD, Update Distribution Daemon. Basically, it's a bunch of Perl scripts. When something changes in one of the accounts or one of the groups or mail lists, that broadcasts the information down to our directories like LDAP, and Active Directory and to some of the bigger tools like WebCT, our e-learning systems that have to create these accounts in their own internal system. Then we run CAS, the open source, single sign-on system, which runs in front of our web server and is fed by LDAP. And then recently we installed Zimbra, which is an enterprise collaboration suite. I'm sure if you go downstairs, they'd love to tell you about it. It pretty much hooks into everything we have. It uses LDAP for POP and IMAP authentication, uses CAS to get into the web client. It gets direct mail list access for to populate its own internal groups. And it's got... and it accepts messages from UDD directly to create email accounts when required. And then, of course, we've got our federated identity management stuff working as well. We're part of the Canadian Access Federation, which is sort of the Canadian analogy to In Common that is building steam. So we run Shibboleth and Eduroam. So that's where we're coming from. This is what's been pieced together. I've heard it described as accidental architecture. It works really well. It's been about 15 years in the making. It's solid. It's reliable. But there's a couple of problems with it. A couple of the strengths, first of all, it's centralized. We have single computing IDs. Everybody who comes on into the system gets one computing ID. We have single sign-on through CAS. We have a lot of self-serve. So mail list, anybody can create a mail list, which can then be used in a number of places as access control lists. So that's quite powerful. You can activate your own accounts. We just issue them, send out emails to new students or staff. They can go and activate them, set their own password. And we have a certain amount of automatic provisioning. Email, file space, you get automatically. If you're in any given course, you get pushed right into WebCT. Some of the limitations are scalability. SORs are systems of record. So we have HR, we have the registrar. If we have another system of record on campus, somebody who has identity information about people that aren't represented in those systems, adding them is basically a manual task. It requires programming from the ground up. And there isn't really a way for individual departments to administer identity information about the people who are in their department. So that's another limitation. Sustainability, there's only two developers who know how this works, and one of them's a rock climber. I'm the other one. In fact, I was hired specifically to backfill him. It's great. I mean, we know this thing inside and out, but if he falls off a mountain and I win the lottery, then SFU's on its own. And granularity is a problem. We have general role support. We know if you're staff, faculty, more affiliations than roles, really, staff, undergrad, grad, or faculty. Beyond that, we really don't know that much about you. And because there's no real way for distributed data entry, we don't have any way for departments to tell us more information about any given user and store it centrally. It sort of limits how fine-grained we can go. So, SFU's future needs. Well, the biggest thing we want is to capture more of the university population. There's a whole bunch of people who come and go through the university for millions of different reasons, and we don't know about them. We don't get them. We have trouble capturing them. We have ways of creating sponsored computing accounts and guest accounts and things like that, but we don't get a lot of good identity information about them. And so our goal is to capture as much of the university population as possible, and that really opens up the opportunities for leveraging that data. We want a more accurate and complete directory. That's phone numbers, email addresses. These are things that change, and HR never knows about it. It's really the departments that know about this information, and so the idea is the only way to get that complete directory is to get the people who know the information to be able to input it. We need greater auditing capabilities. We have logging. We know when accounts are created. We know when they're changed and modified, but We really are looking for a way to keep track of when accounts are used throughout the university. And finally, we need something built on sustainable industry standards. The legacy system was written in WebObjects, which is an old Apple technology. It's still quite powerful, but there's only about there's a handful of people who still know how it works. And once again, we're playing. It's a bit of a risk not being able to go out and find more people who know how to work it. So that's SFU's story. Now Dave's going to tell you the same type of story about Rutgers University, and then he's going to talk about Open Registry.
Okay. Yeah, Rutgers' story is similar in a lot of ways. We are one university, three campuses. That is one way that we're similar. Sorry. but doesn't really matter. We are the State University of New Jersey since, I was going to look this up, I think it's about 1950, 1960 sometime. We were founded in 1766. We have over 56,000 students in any given time, over 4,100 faculty, 6,500 staff, and over 380,000 alumni. Roughly, you know, in similar size to SFU, but just a little bigger. Legacy, where we are today, and I don't have the nice follow-through that Jeremy had. You get it all at once. But let me see if I can get the laser pointer. The payroll and the student records database. Oh, that one. Okay, there we go. These are old mainframe systems from 70s and 80s, still in use today, probably very similar to lots of other places. They were what we started with. In 1999, we created in-house something we call the People Database. And that's very similar to, I don't remember, Jeremy, what, AMATE? Where we collect data from the student systems and from HR payroll, and we combine those and try to give you a single identity. We also have added at the same time guest account creation, so we can add if there's a long-term visitor or whatever, we can go through a help desk or some departmental access to give that guest some sort of access. At that point, then, you have account creation up here that is self-service based on the data. The user would enter their name, their SSN, their birth date, and be able to get access to create an email account or a Unix account if they needed it. Then we have from the People Database, it feeds LDAP. And LDAP is used by a lot of our systems. Applications would use things like CAS, same as Jeremy mentioned, the Central Authentication Service for web apps. We have, this actually is two-factor card authentication. We do have RADIUS, although we're moving off of that. And then eventually everything, the passwords are actually stored in Kerberos, which we've had running for a long time. And so that's today's setup. And I was looking at this chart up here and went, well, that doesn't look too bad. It covers most things. And so at the last minute, we stuffed it in here this morning, I found this chart. This was a chart we did May 2009. We were looking at upgrading, replacing, fixing some problems with card access to buildings, so more physical access. And we were looking at data flows, and this is what we came up with. And if you look at, you know, we said, well, PDB is where everything kind of comes in and then goes down to LDAP out there. Well, PDB is way up here, barely on the picture. And all these various arrows go back and forth are data flowing back and forth. Some of it's manual, FTP, Excel spreadsheets. They get it from different places because of timing issues. So one system may not have it quick enough, so they have to go back to a source system. So, you know, while in general where we are today seems to work okay, this is what it looks like behind the scenes. And part of the problem is that things have been built up over time. So you kind of put things on here and there, but at the end of the day, it doesn't work all that good sometimes. So our strengths and limitations are very similar to SFU's. We do have central identities for students, faculty, and staff. So if you come in as a student and then later on you become a staff member, you will get the same net ID for logging into web apps, assuming that we can. Sometimes we can't figure out that you're the same person, but most of the time we can. So we do have that. We do have central authentication via CAS and LDAP. Now, this is offered as a service. Of course, not everyone at the university wants to use it, so they may have their own AD or or whatever, but a lot of websites do use these. We do have self-service credential creation and self-service email accounts for people. So those are the strengths that we have. The limitations are not all populations are supported. So we have a lot of populations that we'd like to support, some short-term guests, conference attendees, faculty visitors that are just there for a couple days, student guests that are visiting the dorms, vendors. You didn't have to worry a lot about those kind of people, you know, 5-10 years ago. But now they may need access to a building through a swipe card. They may need wireless access. So more and more these kind of people, they're coming for an afternoon, but they still need to be in the system. They still need access. So you really need to start supporting these additional populations. There's also a lot of joint institutions not supported that we'd like to support. So there's a couple other institutions, community colleges at Rutgers, or in New Jersey. You could use Shibboleth for this kind of thing, but a lot of them don't really have that capability to support that. But you have people from these places taking classes at Rutgers, and so somehow you need to get those people in there. It'd be nice if you could have a feed from them and just kind of had that all automated for you, but we aren't there today. Guests are not well supported. Long-term guests are okay. There's a lot of manual process to it. A lot of access is done manually. But short-term guests, we just really don't handle well at all. And all the support we have is very centralized. So it's all done in a central help desk. They have a lot of other things that they need to do. You'd like to be able to say, well, chemistry department, take care of your guests. Don't bother us. Conference attendee, here's access to the application. Enter your people. You do your own thing. So we'd really like to distribute the support for a lot of these tasks. A lot of this on the diagram is not real time at all. In fact, payroll sends a feed down once a week. And the nice thing about our payroll system is it's really just payroll. So when you get hired, you don't get into any of these systems till you actually come and start getting paid, which could be a couple of weeks. And you'd like to set up your email account and set up all this stuff ahead of time, and you can't because you're not in the system. So we'd really like to make a lot of these systems more real-time with each other. And obviously that's both ends have to be more real-time, not just the one. But next one is deprovisioning. So we can generally get people to get accounts reasonably quickly, although sometimes it takes a while. But deprovisioning just doesn't happen quickly at all. Generally, at this point, it's a manual process done once a year. They go through, they do a big query of who should have access, they see who's on the system that shouldn't be there, and take them off. And this one, roles don't always match. So we get, if you come from the student system, you're a student. And the student systems, their idea of a student can be very different from downstream systems. If you're a student, the natural thought would be, well, you're there for the semester and you should have your account kept for that semester. But in the student system, if you don't pay that last payment, they drop you. They deregister you right away. And if you filter the fact that they've deregistered you through, all of a sudden you potentially could lose services. And that's not really what you want to do. You want, you know, that I guess would force them to do that last payment, but that's probably not how you want to do it. Just reiterating again, these are not well-integrated systems. They're old systems that have grown up over time, and we'd really like to improve that. So what we consider our long-term needs, very similar to what Jeremy had said, we'd like some core identity management system that we could have in place for long-term. You don't want to do this and then 10 years later have to do it again. You'd like to really think long term. You want something that's going to be well supported, mature, and can grow with you. So if you have other needs, you can grow. It's extensible. You can do something like that. You certainly want the single identity through a person's lifetime. You don't want them to get 20 million accounts at your university. Again, we cover this pretty good, but we'd really like to go from when we first hear about you as a prospective student, as a high school student, has shown interest at Rutgers, all the way through alumni. We handle part of that, but not all of that. You'd also like to add populations like continuing education, these joint institutions I talked about, conference attendees, et cetera. One of the names for one of our identifiers at the university is called the RCP ID, and that stands for Rutgers Community Participant. And the idea of that, while we don't quite follow the name quite yet, is that anyone who's involved in Rutgers, and vendors I haven't mentioned, anyone who's involved in Rutgers in any way should be able to get into the system, and we should be able to have the identity, and if you come back later in some other role, you still have that. We obviously need faster propagation of data, real time when possible, but certainly better than we have today. And we'd like to have better data for provisioning and especially deprovisioning, both electronically and physically, so for like swipe cards for building access, et cetera. Okay, so how did Open Registry start? We'll get into what it is in the next slide, but just a little history. At Rutgers, I just went through where we were. We felt we needed to do something. In 2006, we created an identity management group at Rutgers. There's two roles for that group. One is running production services like CAS, LDAP, Kerberos. Those were distributed across multiple groups at the university, and we've kind of brought those all into the identity management group. And the other part of this is new development, and that's where Open Registry comes into play. Along around the same time, the university came up with an IT strategic plan, and identity management was brought up in that fairly significantly a number of times. So that really helped our cause. One of the first things we did, besides bring all these production services in, which took forever, we wrote this Rutgers Identity Management Assessment. So we felt before we could move forward, we really needed to know where we were. And what that meant is, you know, when you look, if you go back to that chart, payroll is off, you know, in the payroll department, HR, you've got the students, the registrar, you've got all these groups that you've worked with over the years, but do you really know how that all works? So we wrote this document that, I think it ended up like 60 pages or something, that really documented all those flows and all the timing and how all the data came through. And it really helped us look at, well, this is a problem area. So soon after that, we came up with a list of potential initiatives. This is about 15 initiatives, both short-term, long-term, that we felt kind of came out of this that we wanted to fix. And these all have differing priorities, and we've done a few of them, and registry or something at that point was one of them. So in March 2008, we started designing something that we're currently calling Open Registry. And did a lot of design work, or still doing some design work. In January 2009, it became a JSIG incubator project. So now this is an open source project that hopefully eventually anyone, we're gearing it towards universities, but anyone can use, anyone can help be part of the project. Then in late 2009, SFU joined the project, and so now in terms of development, there are these two universities doing development. There are a number of universities who are interested, but either haven't committed the time or are waiting to see that we actually can develop something before they jump in. All right, finally, what is Open Registry? Open Registry is an open source identity management system. It's a place where data about people affiliated with your institution. So it's basically information on all the people at your institution, however they get there. Notice that we don't call it a people registry. Okay, the long-term, and it's probably a very long-term goal, of Open Registry is to include other types of registries. So you could envision, and I mean, we've thought about this, but haven't gone down that path because we got enough to do, but you could envision a group registry, which may just be something called Grouper, if you've heard of that, plug that in, or coming up with a group registry. Could be a classes registry, an accounts registry, a credentials registry. So Open Registry, in theory, encompasses all of these things. Right now, we're focusing on just the people part of it. It combines distributed identity information into single identity records. So if you're a student and you come in as a faculty or staff, you should have the same identity. You should have the same login, NetID. If for some reason you do end up with two, there should be a way of merging them once you find out about that. It is an identity store, but it's generally not authoritative. Okay, so it's getting data from other systems. Your registrar is generally the authoritative source for students. Your payroll or HR system is the one for faculty and staff. We're generally just collecting data. Now, guests can be thought of as maybe being authoritative in here, but most of your big systems, the data is coming from somewhere else. So one of the major things that the registry is going to do is going to do something called identity reconciliation for all these multiple system of records. So if you come down from payroll and you come down from students, how do we decide that you're the same person? And so we're looking at the data, you know, obviously SSN and name and birth date and gender if you have it, although we don't have a lot of that. You know, any data that we have, we try to look and see if we can match it with someone in the system, and either there's a good match, no match, or a lot of times a very fuzzy match. And you get to decide what to do with that. Another thing the registry does is identifier assignment. So there may be some identifiers, SSN is an obvious one, employee ID, student ID, that come from these other systems, and you're just collecting that like any other data. But this is a place where you can generate now the NetID so that they can log into applications and web access. So it does identifier assignment for those identifiers that make sense to have here. The other identifier that we're going to be generating at Rutgers is a card number for the back of your card for physical access to buildings. Input is through a number of different interfaces. There'll be a web, batch, and REST interface. Output, a number of different interfaces, queues, REST again, potentially batch, possibly a report server, directory builder, which could build LDAP or AD. There could be provisioning and deprovisioning engine, things like that. So here's a drawing of what I just described. You have your external services. This is both input and output. So let's say your student and payroll, it comes in through one of the interfaces, either real-time, web, for like if you're a conference attendee person, or batch, comes into the registry. Behind that, of course, is a database. We don't pick the database for you. We've been testing on Oracle and MySQL, I believe, but it should be fairly database agnostic. Then output is, could be queuing, could be batch. That would go to a directory builder that could do LDAP, Active Directory, a provisioning engine that could do provisioning of accounts and so forth. These we're not really considering directly part of the registry, but obviously it's something that you could see being part of a larger system. This is just a flow through the registry. Keep losing that button. There it is. So if you have batch or SQL, kind of the same thing, you load it into potentially raw tables. REST and web may not need to go into some raw tables. But then you're going to do a number of transformations, like you're going to validate the data. You may normalize the data, get the formats of dates and gender and all those kind of things that are going to potentially be different from, you know, one may say M for male, one may say male for male coming from different systems. So you're going to normalize and standardize those. You come up with standardized information from a particular source of record. So a standardized table, you'd have one for information from your student system for a particular person, and then you'd also have a standardized set of tables for the faculty or staff. Then you want to combine those into the single identity. So then you have to do reconciliation to decide, is this a person I already know about, or is it someone new? Identify as kind of part of that. Then there may be fields that you need to elect. So let's say you've got data coming in from two sources, and they list their home address as different in the two of them. Well, you really kind of got to pick one of those. I mean, a person typically only has one home address. So maybe you say payroll does a better check of that, so I'm always going to elect to go with the one from payroll. You could also have that problem with names. Okay, so there may be a preferred name for a person. As a student, they may have come in with one name, but as a staff member, they may have had to come in with their, quote, official name, which they didn't necessarily have to give as a student. Calculation is for any fields that you may want to calculate that don't come from the source but are calculated from other data. So then you finally end up with tables that is the merged calculated data on a person, and that's the data that then would come out through queues, through report server, potentially batch. Okay. I'll just stop here a sec. Any questions on what Open Registry is and a very high level view of how it works? Yes. We haven't, but that's the provisioning and the directory builder are parts that we haven't been tackling yet, so we could certainly look at doing that. And maybe if there's an open source provisioning engine out there, we could use that, just like I mentioned, Grouper, certainly using those kind of systems. If it fits in well with this, then there's no reason to come up with it again. So why open source? You have, very generally, you've got sort of three choices. You've got an off-the-shelf solution. There's probably a number of vendors downstairs that would gladly sell you something. But sometimes these things, there's still a fairly significant amount of work for customization and integration work. They may only solve some of your problems. They may not even be specifically for higher ed, so they may not be a good fit for you. So a lot of places have these kind of solutions, but there's also problems with that. As far as doing something in-house versus open source, an in-house place probably has, especially these days, fairly scant resources to do so. You're running production services, you're trying to keep things going day to day, and now you want to fix or build your system in-house, and it's getting harder to do that. The open source community, if you can collaborate with a number of universities, that's lots of combined experience. You can take advantage of that. And tied with that, you can learn from other experience of other systems like Sakai, uPortal, CAS, Shibboleth, Qali. Those are all systems that essentially started this way. And as Jeremy pointed out with his rock climbing colleague, it's tough to have all your in-house knowledge with just a few people, and that's generally how it's going to be, those people, they may not have a problem with rock climbing, but they just may leave or retire or whatever. And so if you have an open source system that you can go to the community to solve a problem, that just helps with your support a lot better. And what we're doing with this project is we're tailoring it to higher education. State of the project. We have the data model designed. It's reasonably stable. We make little tweaks here and there as we're doing development, but it's reasonably stable. There'll be some links online if you really want to look at the pictures. I was going to put up a slide, but then realized it either fits on the slide and is completely unreadable, or you get a very tiny part of it and it's readable, so I didn't bother. We have domain objects, so a person object, a role object, those kind of things, and a service layer. We have that written, so you can do add person, add role, update person, update role, those kind of things. And we're currently at Rutgers in the process of testing this with real live data. So our student systems and our, soon I'll get into that in a second, but our payroll system will be coming next. So we're putting a lot of data through the system and working on issues and bugs with that. Input is fairly well defined and is being implemented. We're currently working on batch. There is REST and UI, but all of those need additional work. Output is probably the piece that is the least well designed and developed. And we're at Rutgers, we're still kind of gathering requirements on who needs access to this data. Our old system, a lot of people have access. Finding out who they are and what kind of access they need is a long process. What we're hoping at Rutgers is sometime, say in the first half next year, we're thinking maybe around June timeframe, we're going to hopefully do our first deployment with Open Registry. That is somewhat dependent on, we're putting in a new PeopleSoft payroll system this December. And so we want to make sure that that interaction with everything else is very stable before we go to Open Registry, which is another totally new system, totally rewritten. So, you know, that could shift things if we're having some issues with PeopleSoft. And now I'm going to turn it back over to Jeremy to talk about how he got involved and go through a workflow.
Thanks, Dave. Yeah, I want to leave time for questions, but I just wanted to briefly mention how, you know, how we got involved in this. A little history. Back in January of 2005, we developed a new tool called the Sponsored Account Management Application, which sort of distributed the ability for people around campus to create computing accounts in the system. In April 2007, we did a single computing ID project. What that meant was that it used to be if you came in through HR, you got an account. If you came in through the registrar, we'd give you another account. So we did a whole big project to unify that. So now everybody gets one account with one or more roles attached to it. Then in 2008, Distance Ed became a third system of record. The Center for Online Distance Education, they were offering courses so that people needed identity to get access to our resources, but they weren't coming through the student system. So we actually added them as a third system of record to AIMAIT, and that was a huge job that required basically going right into the guts of the Java code. Then in 2008, we introduced something called lightweight accounts. These are accounts that don't require email or Unix file space. You know, so these are just basically for getting on wireless and stuff. And so, you know, I had started in 2004 and then done these major modifications, all sort of bolting them on. And I said, okay, we have to start to talk about the next generation of this. I mean, what is this going to look like in 10, 20 years when the guy who I was hired to work with retires and it's all up to me? And do I want to be bolting stuff onto this for the next 20 years? And so, I started looking, and I looked at all the vendors and see what they had, and none of them seemed to quite capture what we were after. And then I found this Open Registry project that the Rutgers IDM team were working on, and I made contact with them, and I was blown away by how much their problem space was just like ours. And I'm sure you can tell from looking at our two presentations that we're dealing with the same thing. In fact, maybe everybody in the world is dealing with the same thing. So in last September, last year at this time, I attended the UN-conference, the JSIG UN-conference, which is actually coming up next week, if anybody's going to be in the Chicago area. And I met some of the guys there, and we talked about, again about what this project's like. And again, the more I worked with them, the more I realized this is what we need. So then I started working on it in late 2009. I made my first commits into the Open Registry code base. And then this summer we ramped things up. I spent some time, you know, developing our needs making sure that it fit with what our business users wanted. And now there are four developers devoting some portion of their time to actively developing Open Registry. So I know Dave sort of went over how Open Registry works. I like to take a different perspective on it without worrying about any of the technical stuff and just try to explain how Open Registry fits with the way your university works. So I like to start with a cloud because everything's about clouds. This is where users come from. Users come from the clouds. It's raining users. And so when they come into your university, they're going to come in through the student information system or the HR system, and then they're going to get into Open Registry, or in my case, AIMAINT, in Dave's case, PDB. They're going somewhere in order for you to issue them computing accounts. So let's look at our student. He comes in through the student system. He gets pushed into Open Registry. Open Registry creates an identity for him, gives him a role of undergrad. Now he goes and gets a job at the bookstore to help pay his tuition. Now he gets pushed in from HR. We say, hey, we know that guy. We give him a role of staff. Works great. Well, if he stops being a student and is only a staff, we find out from student information system, we change his role to former undergrad. That way we know forever who he was. But what about another system? Now, CODE stands for the Center for Online Distance Education. It's a very SFU-specific term, but it fits nice on the slide. Basically, when CODE came to us, they needed to get their users into WebCT. That's pretty much all they wanted. It was being done manually, and it didn't seem right because Open Registry already has a feed into WebCT. Regular students have to get pushed into WebCT. So the first thing we thought is, well, why don't we just push CODE into the student information system and let them ride through? Well, that's not really what the student information system's for. If it's anything like your system, it's a fortress. This is the central repository for all the student information. It was designed as a master, not a slave. And getting the resources and even getting mindshare to open up that student information system for these distance ed students is a big challenge. So that's not going to work. So Open Registry comes in and we make CODE yet another system of record. So now when the user shows up from CODE, they get pushed down, they get the role of CODE student, and then into WebCT, and they can happily access all their courses. So now you can see we've now, just by the way it's drawn, there's a new system of record. Eventually, Emily's going to expire from being, well, her role's going to expire, not Emily, but she's got probably after a semester. But let's say she goes on, gets her PhD, and shows up in HR one day as a faculty member, shows up in Open Registry, and we say, we have that identity. We just add that identity. So I'm just trying to give you an example of how, as they move through the university forever, throughout their entire life, from a minimal connection through to a full-time position, we don't keep creating identities for them, and we sort of know who they are. The last example I want to give is the bookstore. Remember, Kipling over here is working in the bookstore. Now, all we know about him is that he's staff. That's all HR is going to know. They might know his department, that he happens to be in the bookstore. But the bookstore itself has a lot more information about Kipling that would be very useful in the identity and management system. So, for example, they might know that he's a bookstore clerk, and bookstore clerks get access to certain systems inside the bookstore. But the bookstore probably doesn't have a large enterprise database that they use to track their employees. There's only a dozen of them. So what we can do is we can provide a desktop access via desktop through a web interface into Open Registry. So we treat the bookstore as a system of record, but it doesn't have to have a whole system behind it. It's really just conceptually it's a system of record in that they have the identity information that's required. So now they can push Kipling's information into Open Registry. We know he's a bookstore clerk, and now the bookstore can use our central LDAP server to do its own authentication because it's allowed to place role information into the central identity system. And the power of that is, as soon as HR fires him, he'll lose his staff role, and because the bookstore is bound to our central LDAP, deprovisioning happens automatically regardless of where he drops from. So that's basically the idea behind Open Registry, and I put this animation together after stumbling over lots of explanations of how this works and what it is and showing the flows and stuff. So I hope that sort of shows you where it's going to look. I have made the mistake of giving people the impression that it does that right now. That's why Dave did the state of the project. We've got a lot of the underlying stuff together. What really needs work right now is the inputs, is the user interface layer, and that's sort of where we're working next. So that's our story. If you want more information about the project, please visit the JSIG wiki, join the OpenReg dev list, attend a JSIG event, or feel free to contact Dave or myself. We're always available. So I hope we have a couple of minutes for questions. Yeah, about 5 minutes for questions. So does anybody, right here? It's supposed to be based on EduPerson. So the roles, I mean, that's something we really have to work on, is what additional roles and how we want to handle roles and affiliations. But at the high level, we based it on EduPerson. Yeah, at the back. Okay, so the question was why use an external database? Why not use the inherent capabilities of LDAP? I don't know if you want to tackle that question. You were there for the design phase.
Yeah, I guess I would consider LDAP a downstream system. So, like, we have LDAP, and it's useful for some of the same things that you're talking about. But as far as the registry, you want something that's whole in itself. And there may be universities that aren't running the LDAP or just Active Directory. So I wouldn't use that as the placeholder for all this information. It's really considered a downstream system as far as that's concerned. I mean, I suppose I could see it that, I mean, LDAP's not really meant to be used as a database, so it'd be hard to use that in the spot of the database.
I think it's an interesting idea, for sure. It is an interesting idea. I've never thought of LDAP that way. I think we all sort of realize that it's going to end up in LDAP. Whether or not it can actually start in LDAP, I haven't actually considered. I guess I would think that it requires, you know, just a lot more business intelligence before it gets there, but that might not be the case. That's a good point. Right. So the feedback there is that for reporting purposes, it's much, much easier to have it in a database.
I think the data model is a lot richer than, not that you couldn't do it in LDAP, I guess, but I think the data model is a lot richer than I'd want to try putting in LDAP.
Yeah. At the back? Cool. Okay, Kent, are you keeping track of time? Are we done? Okay, so maybe one more question, if anybody has any more questions. That's a good point.
There's a lot of issues, questions, requirements with policy. We've started looking at some of them. We certainly haven't looked at all of them I don't think we're as robust to handle all of that yet, but it's certainly something that has to be there.
Yeah, it's come up in the discussions. I mean, I think for the most part we're focusing on building it and we'll have to answer those questions before we deploy it, for sure. So, one last.
When do you expect to be fully functional in production? I mean, I think I heard 2011.
Rutgers is...
Right,
go ahead.
So our goal, which could change, but our goal right now is, say, June of next year to do something. At that point, then, I would say other places could start to look at it in terms of using it. We'll see. Some of the things may not be as flexible as other places may want, but I think that'll be then a good start, that as other universities have other needs, they can add little pieces to it. So I'm hoping that's about the time scale.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that by this time next year we'll be able to, our first phase is to deploy it as a replacement for our sponsored account management system, so to start capturing parts of the community that aren't currently captured, basically. So that's our first step, and we have a goal of sometime around this time next year. So we can take any more questions offline. Feel free to get on the Open Registry Dev list, and I appreciate your time. Thank you.